This week on Life and Faith.
Teaching is not about having expertise in subject matter. Teaching is about your ability to deal with little humans who have good days, bad days, and being a teacher is very much about having the ability to walk into a room on a daily basis, read the temperature of the room, and then decide how you're going to do something. Every lesson is a new adventure.
We have entered into an amusing ourselves to death moment in history.
It doesn't make sense to me. If there is God, God's supposed to be free.
I was 100% sure that I was sacrificing on the altar of truth my only chance for happiness in this world.
Miracles don't necessarily change anybody's mind. They just get their attention.
And so I had to run with my child on my back, the ISA army coming behind us.
I said, gee, Uncle George, this is luxurious for a communist. Son, he said, nothing's too good for the worker. Nothing.
Welcome to Life and Faith from CPX. I'm Simon Smart, and I'm still broadcasting from home, but we might be back in the studio soon as Australia slowly emerges from lockdown.
And I'm Justine Toe, also from lockdown. So today, Simon, we're singing the praises of teachers, like we did with nurses a few weeks back. And since you used to be a teacher, Simon, I feel like for this episode, I should be calling you Mr. Smart.
Yes, perhaps that's a good move from now on, Justine. I was a teacher a long time ago now. I taught history and some English here in Sydney. Also, a bit of a stint in the UK and some pretty memorable places in East London and Essex. So, yeah, now this is a subject I'm pretty interested in, I have to say.
And so this means that you knew what world of pain was awaiting you as we went into lockdown. Like, unlike me, you knew what was coming, yeah?
I think I had a bit of a sense of it, although I have to admit our kids are mid to late high school, so it wasn't as hands-on as people like you with really small kids. But I have to say, Justin, this time has shown us a little bit of what essential workers like nurses and teachers are doing all the time. And what lies beneath a lot of it, which is care and attention for other people. And that's certainly a theme that comes out in our chats with lots of teachers today.
Yes, and what really came out in our chats with them was how emotionally exhausting it is for teachers normally. And then you get something like COVID, which just ramps up all the pressures on them. And I hear that apparently something like 30 to 50% of teachers leave teaching in their first 5 years out. So can you tell me more about the pressures teachers face, because you have been one, and did they contribute to you leaving teaching as well?
Well, it's a hugely demanding job, more than most people realise, I reckon. And that probably, to some extent, contributed to me eventually wanting to try other things. But I really love teaching. I love the interaction with the kids and the staff. I love lots about the job. It was really, you know, engaging and interesting. And when you're working with people all the time, I think you feel that. But yeah, I always felt like I probably had two more classes than I could do well. And that's really stressful. There's so many balls in the air, and there are some people who are just amazing at juggling those. And I was in awe of the best ones at that. Now, Justine, did you have a favorite teacher at school?
I did have a favorite teacher. It strikes me that you're not allowed to have a favorite child, but I think it's okay to have a favorite teacher. So I do.
Yeah, right.
And I was really lucky and grateful because I got to interview him for this podcast. So that was really fun. And you'll hear a bit from Marcel later. But what about you? Did you have a favorite teacher?
Yes, I did. Although my schooling was marked by the lack of good teachers, honestly. And that can inspire you in a sort of roundabout way. But no, I had some good ones too. Probably my favourite was also my longtime cricket coach too. And there's something in that for sure. So we have been out speaking to teachers this week. Here they are, in their own words, starting off with their own favourite teachers.
I distinctly remember my economics teacher. He was my favourite
teacher.
This
is Nigel, long-time geography teacher and head of department in a school in Sydney's north. I actually used to teach with him. He's a legend. He's a great classroom teacher.
He had a wonderful rapport with his class. He had incredibly high expectations of us. And he also had the ability to switch the dynamic in the classroom from one of a jovial, relaxed atmosphere to one of a strong work ethic, almost at the click of a finger. So he really, for me and for many the rest of us, was a key figure, I guess, in developing us and developing an interest in us to become teachers.
Next up is Nikki. She teaches music at a selective government girls' high school.
So the first person that comes to mind when I think of teachers from my schooling is actually one particular teacher from my high school. She was one of those teachers that was a bit eccentric, a bit odd, I would say, but in the same way that she was odd, she was actually quite brilliant and very passionate, which I think for students like me probably wouldn't have done as well in English if I hadn't had someone like her. She really did sort of bring everyone with her and sort of inspire us all. And we actually all did extremely well. And I think that's because of how passionate she was about her subject, obviously, but also us as her students, which has really stuck with me over the years.
Well, I had teachers who inspired me and teachers.
This is Sarah, who teaches English and is head of learning at a girls' school in Sydney's Inner West.
So my year five teacher, Mr. Rademski, I hope he's listening. I love you to bits. You transformed my life. And Mr. Wilson, who was my history teacher in year 11 and 12. I just have never forgotten any of the stories he told or his kindness or his sense of humour. Both of those teachers were first and foremost in my mind, particularly in those early years when I was a brand new teacher and I didn't really know what I was doing. I would track how I was in the classroom against my memory of those two teachers.
I had a teacher, Mr. Egan, who was the head of the English department at school I was at in year nine. I was in a lot of trouble. I was just acting out, basically. So I didn't do work. I wasn't performing. And what he basically did was...
This is Marcel, the favourite teacher I mentioned before. Now, he taught me high school English and ancient history. I was a model pupil. I was eager to learn and desperate to achieve, but he was not. He found himself in a middling English class where he would neither be pushed or push himself. But his favourite teacher, Mr. Egan, could see that Marcel was capable of much more.
So he took me into his class, which was the absolute bottom class, which for my level of English was nowhere where it should have been. And he let me, and he spent a year with me basically reminding me of my love for the subject by letting the subject and reading and all the things that he knew that I had in me, he let them lead the way. And he sort of acted as a guide through that year, which allowed me then to return to doing higher level English for the HSC. So that was an example of a teacher who didn't look at the results, didn't look at the numbers as such. He looked at the person and said, this is the way you help this person. Of course, my parents were horrified, but it really was a case of recognizing that sometimes with kids, and I've seen this since, the obvious solution is not the best solution. The best solution sometimes is the one outside the box where you have to go, wow, okay, I'm going to do the reverse of what you would think you would normally do.
And yet, even if our teachers had favourite teachers of their own, this didn't mean that they wanted to follow in their footsteps. Here's Nigel again.
I had a very sort of meandering journey to become a teacher. I always had a hankering for it, but I let other people convince me not to, especially my mum. And she convinced me that I should be aiming higher, that teaching wasn't going to be good enough because my grades were too good. And somewhat foolishly, I guess, I took some of that advice and ended up being a trainee chartered accountant and hated every second of it. And then ultimately, I guess, came to the idea that, in fact, I was a teacher. And when I look back somewhat, you know, with hindsight, I guess it's easy. I used to take surfing trips to the local surf club and take young fellas on surf trips. And the mate that I used to do this with was indeed a high school teacher. And I look back at that and think, how dumb was I not recognize that this is really was really my calling? And sure enough, got into teaching and never, ever regretted it.
I think I'd always had in my mind that I wouldn't mind doing it. I was discouraged from going into teaching when I left school by my dad, even though my mum and my uncle had both been teachers. And so I kind of had a very roundabout route to get to teaching. Worked in the
This is Evan, by the way, who teaches history and Christian studies. He's been in both government and independent schools.
Worked in the travel industry for 10 years, and I wasn't really finding that particularly rewarding. It was fun at times, but I didn't feel like I was doing anything that was having a really meaningful impact on people's lives, and I wanted to do that. So I'd studied politics at university, and that meant it was quite easy for me to get a dip ed and then transition into teaching.
For Marcel, getting into teaching was kind of an accident. He was studying journalism at university, but didn't want to decide between print, radio, or broadcast.
I didn't want to make a choice, so I decided to continue doing a range of subjects. Philosophy, I did film, I did creative writing. I got to the end of the third year, I actually had enough credit points to do the Graduate Diploma of Teaching, which was being offered for the first time as a one-year fourth sort of year course. So I didn't want to leave uni, so I took it. I did that year, went on prac, which, you know, was where you're out in front of those classes, and really enjoyed myself and seemed to connect. And, you know, I'm a big believer in fate. I think fate plays a big role in things, and it seemed like that door got opened and I walked through it.
Marcel's experience would resonate with Sarah. There was something about the classroom that hooked her, even though she didn't want to follow in the footsteps of her dad, also an English teacher.
And the minute I stepped into a practicum, I have never looked back. Like, it was transformative for me. The minute I stepped into a classroom, I was like, I never want to leave.
And now the fun part. What's the most rewarding part of teaching? Sarah doesn't miss a beat.
The look on students' faces as they discover something for the first time. Teenagers are like, they're grown up enough to try and hide the fact that something is exciting, but they're not grown up enough to fully succeed. And so you get this beautiful moment where an almost adult suddenly forgets and just becomes a child again, you know, as they discover something for the first time. It's like a drug watching it. It's just so exciting.
It's definitely the relationships, I think. And that's really the most important thing about teaching is connecting with the students, helping them understand that you're really there, wanting them to succeed, wanting them to find their gifts and to thrive. And, you know, the only way to do that is by building really genuine relationships. And so that's something that I've discovered more and more as I've gone on in my teaching, how important it is that the kids know that you're there for them, and that, you know, if you're getting them in trouble for something, it's because you want them to succeed, and that you celebrate in their success, and you also, to some extent, join with them in their failures.
You know, seeing a young man that's floundering in years 7, 8, or 9, and you get him in year 11 and 12, and he's transformed into this learning machine, and has got a desire to make progress and do well in life. And I think that's the big thing that got me into it and keeps me enthused by it. And I've even said to my own kids, you know, you change dramatically, you can do in adolescence, and you can transform yourself from an underachiever to a real go-getter, and it can happen so quickly within a couple of years. And I guess an adjunct to that, or something that's really strongly related to it, is the sense that we must never, ever, ever forget everything that we say, the things that we do, have an enormous influence in young people. And years later, I've had people that I've bumped into in the surf or in the street or whatever, and they'll come up to you and say, oh, you might not remember me, Mr. Scotty, but I'm really thankful for whatever. And you go, wow, I can't even remember saying that or doing that. and the hairs stand up in the back of your neck and think, wow, I've got to be so careful when I go to work on Monday and remember what I'm doing and what I'm saying. It can have such an influence.
Here's another one of those hair standing up at the back of your neck stories told by Marcel to illustrate that. At one point, he taught in a school that accepted kids who'd been expelled from everywhere else.
This particular girl, through no fault of her own, just ended up in an environment, in a world where she lacked support. There was a lot of drug issues around her life. But the thing about her, the core of this girl, was that she was very smart, just a really smart young kid who, when she got interested in something, you could see this ability to sort of go beyond what she was experiencing in her daily life. We had a lesson on To Kill a Mockingbird, and it connected with her, just connected, the book connected, the stories connected. And I said to her at the time, so she would have been in year nine at this point, and I said, you're so good at understanding troubled people because of your life experiences and whatever, you're going to be great in dealing with that. She said, yeah, you know, I want to go to uni and deal with law and order and justice, because justice was such a key thing. It's one of those things when you have a life where there is so little order in your life, it's amazing how important to these kids justice is.
Time passes. And then out of the blue one day, a text arrived from her. It said,
I've just been accepted into law at Newcastle. I remembered that you were the first person that had said this to me, so I just wanted to let you know. So it wasn't great teaching by any stretch of the imagination. It was simply a fact that this was a very intelligent young woman who, if she could overcome the challenges that she had to overcome and get to that point of where she could actually utilize her experiences to move forward, she would have a wonderful opportunity to have a life of real meaning. And this is one of the first steps for her. So it really was the fact that this was just one of those cases where it was just a kind word more than anything else.
Teaching has many highs, but of course there are some lows. For Sarah, teaching is a kind of job where you give, give and give, and that can take its toll.
The exhaustion. Yeah, the exhaustion. I think that...
You get all these holidays though, surely. That's
Well, if you're on year 11 and 12, your holidays are spent marking, because students often finish an assessment towards the end of term. And so at least in English, that's double marking. That means you've got each paper is marked twice. So that's often how you spend your holidays. But I would also say that I have spent a year not working in education. I think the emotional demands of teaching well, the empathy required to listen to each student, work out what's making them tick, work out how to introduce them to the beautiful world of literature, et cetera, that downward mobility that teaching, good teaching requires, has a personal cost. And for the first two or three days of a holiday, I'm like a burning car on the side of the freeway, just so tired. Probably makes me a worse mother, I think, sometimes, being a teacher. Yeah.
There's more. When you're a student, teachers can seem somewhat remote, but it turns out they feel your pain too.
I hate giving back assessment tasks to years 11 and 12 especially, because I know that a lot of those boys are just on the precipice of tears in front of their peers because they've worked so damned hard and then they're disappointed by the results. And I often say at the start of year 12, fellas, at the end of the day, it's just an exam.
You have to watch students grieve sometimes. That's really hard. And I don't want to tell their stories, but, you know, it's same. When you get to see brand new knowledge occur, but you also have to see a person who's never realised that life isn't fair discover that for the first time. It's really hard.
When you're dealing with any large group of people, sometimes the unbelievably tragic occurs. Students die. it's gutting and devastates the whole school community.
I've had a couple when kids, you know, have taken their own lives and you think, oh my gosh, that, you know, why? And even in the last couple of years, I've lost two boys, one to cancer and one falling off the back of a car. And you think, oh, there's a life lost. So for me, those were the hardest times.
Last year, I had a student who I'd taught the year before, lovely boy, and he died last year, and that was really sad. You know, and kids go through tough times at schools, and they're developing and understanding themselves, and unfortunately, that happens. To build those relationships with your students, and then, you know, for one of them to die, that's by far the hardest thing that I've had to deal with. And I know it's crushing for lots of teachers and the whole school community. So, yeah, difficult.
So for me, in my particular school context, we have students who are incredibly bright and capable academically. But unfortunately, sometimes that brings with it its own set of challenges that are quite unique, I think. A lot of our students really struggle with, not just my students, but, you know, I think a lot of students in general. Mental health is a big thing. A lot is going on. Their brains are developing. They're dealing with relational issues. They've got things, pressures at home, pressures at school. One particular moment, if I can pinpoint it, I still remember a student I had a few years ago, and she was in my classes, and I had her, I think, in one of my choir ensembles, and she did struggle quite often during school, but we were able to be there for her and give her the support she needed. And then I still remember 2 years after that year group graduated, we were told that unfortunately that student had taken her life. As a teacher and having had that relationship with that student over years and years and years, to all of a sudden hear 2 years after they graduate that this has happened, it's just devastating, obviously. And even more so, I was really quite close with that year group as a sort of a senior year group. And I still remember going to the funeral of that student and seeing all my ex-students there, obviously their students' friends, and just having to, I guess, still be the teacher. Even though they had graduated, I was still that person for them, and to be there, like, it was amazing to be there with them during that time, but obviously it was for an incredibly sad reason that we were able to reconnect again. So yeah.
Now, when it comes to faith in schools, there can be a lot of understandable angst. People fear students are getting indoctrinated. But some of these teachers spoke about how their faith shaped their practice in surprising ways. Here's Evan.
I'm called to show God's love to people, and sometimes it's not easy to do that. You know, there's students that can be difficult, and for a whole range of different reasons, but it's really important for me as a teacher to keep reminding myself that God created them the way that they are, and he loves them dearly. And even though we're broken, it's really important for me to keep reminding myself of that, and to help my students really see that they're loved by God and that they're created the way that he wanted to create them, and that he loved them just like that. So that drives me.
I mean, that question's been posed to me a few times because I'm an English teacher. So I think that people assume, well, that means I'll try and like squeeze God, Jesus, Bible into whatever I teach. that's not what it means for me. I think what it means to me are two things. It means that I think that the activity of reading text is really important to do well, because I believe in human communication, and I believe in the importance of words and literature, no matter what that literature is saying. And I think the other thing it means to me is that all students are important to me. It does not matter how they're achieving at that current moment in time. I believe that they are made in God's image and important and special. And so I have high hopes for each and every one, no matter how he or she performs. So I have really high expectations, and I actually think that's born from a kind of theological vision of what I think the human is.
So for me as a Christian, I definitely feel that as a teacher, it's one of those jobs, I guess, that it's almost like I describe it as I'm drawn to it. I don't find it easy. I actually find it incredibly challenging because I obviously see it as being incredibly important. And I think that's because I want to be someone in a student's life, whether or not they're a Christian or not, it doesn't really matter to me, who is kind and generous with their time, who is, you know, more than willing to help no matter what the situation.
This is the way Evan sums it up.
Because of my faith, I believe everyone has a calling as a unique individual. So every student that I teach is facing that challenge of how to best use their gifts. If I can play a part in helping kids walk down that path and to uncover something of that calling, then I will have done a great job.
Finally, we asked our teachers what they would like people to know about teaching.
It's funny, I don't think you need to wish that anymore because the last 2 months has completely taken that away. The thing that is said more often than anything else that I've ever read in my life has been parents going, I will never be angry at a teacher again after having to try to homeschool for 2 months. You've learned as parents what teaching is. Teaching is not about having expertise in subject matter. Teaching is about your ability to deal with little humans who have good days, bad days. There are times they're completely on top of a topic. There are other times where they really struggle with something. And what I think people now have learned is actually about being flexible. And being a teacher is very much about having the ability to walk into a room on a daily basis, read the temperature of the room, and then decide how you're going to do something. Now, not all teachers do that, of course, but for me, that's what teaching has always been, that every lesson is a new adventure.
Sarah said this ability, being able to read the room, made virtual classes during lockdown challenging. But what she says also shows just how dynamic teaching can be, because teachers are not just dealing with students, but people.
I think what makes good teaching possible is that you can calibrate your teaching according to the multifaceted information that's in front of you, the way a student turns her head or the downcast eyes or the face lighting up or any of those things. So teachers are taking in like not only data, as in like hard and fast data of how a student performs in assessment, but they're also taking in, you know, the 27 human beings who are in front of them and then adjusting practice.
What I'd really love parents to know is that, you know, most of us, we're invested in your children. It's not about coming to work to pick up the dollars. Indeed, you shouldn't be doing the job if that's the motivation. And I hark back to, you know, what my mum tried to convince me not to become a teacher all those years ago about, you know, you're not going to earn that much money. And even when I went for my interview to do my postgraduate certificate in education, and they drilled down into that very point. And when I look back all those years ago, what they were really after was, this is such an important job because you're developing human beings. And that's what I'd like to say to parents. Like, you know, we're not here to punish your child. We're here to develop your child. And sometimes, you know, there's tough decisions that we have to make. But really, we're here to develop the most important thing in your life, your child.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from CPX. I'm Simon Smart with Justine Toe.
Thanks so much to the teachers and friends we spoke to in this episode. Nigel, Sarah, Evan, Marcel, and Nikki. Consider this our love letter to you for the work that you do.
If you've enjoyed this ode to teachers and want to give a shout out to them for all their hard work, and not just during COVID, then why not share this episode around? We are working hard to contribute to a positive conversation about faith, meaning, and the things that matter. Everything we do here at CPX seeks to do just that. It's made possible by supporters who donate to us, and we'd love you to consider doing just this. Every bit counts. Go to lifeandfaithpodcast.com to find out more. Next week.
I think I was very lucky to be able to go into politics at the age I did and get to the top and get so much done in a relatively short time. And you know, because I was able to have a lot of exciting adventures before I got into politics. I, you know, had lots of several careers. And I mean, I nearly got into politics when I was in my 20s, you know, by quite by accident, really, but just as well I didn't.